Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized, and with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com, that's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
So. Supposed to come to the studio in pretty... A lot cooler setting, I think, than the studio.
Yeah.
So, especially because the circumstance of, well, people find out why we came out kind of. Well, actually, we were planning on coming out anyway, but some cool things happened.
Yeah.
For this, us coming out to record some podcasts. But, man, I mean, you're kind of one of the brain children behind the new Deer Season 21. So if anybody's watching this, obviously you have seen Deer Season 21 and are familiar with that new series. We may or may not have been watching it on the drive up here. So I think it's great, man. And I know you guys are putting a lot of hard work into all the new content and stuff in the DeerCast app and on the Drury Outdoors YouTube and stuff. So what's that like, working on that whole project?
It has been, man, it's been such a blast. Like I mentioned briefly, you know, I usually didn't really start getting into a busy edit time of the year until late October, November.
Right, right.
And when I, you know, talk with Mark, he's like, it starts and it does not stop. Mm-hmm. And it's just been a blast, you know. It's a team effort. You know, I don't want to take any sole credit in any way.
Of course,
you know, Deer Season 21 is guys up here, the guys down in Missouri. You know, Ben and Carson have been grinding just as much as I have. People laying the footage down.
Yeah,
I mean, that's probably been the most fun part. It's not a one man crew, and it's been a lot of fun. So
it's got to be challenging too, because it's like as live as it could get, really, and with the production quality on it is insane. For how quick it's like getting rolled out. So like I had every intention. I'm like, you know, cause when Mark and you came to the studio, I'm like, I'm going to keep up with this and stay on it. And I'm like behind now. So now I'm like trying to catch up on the episodes and I'm falling behind on it. So it's impressive how fast you guys are getting new content up. And what's cool as a DeerCast user, it can kind of get you up to speed where they're at almost in real time.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun, and it's crazy as I feel like we get caught up, and then, as you alluded to,
we're behind.
Some big things happened in the past few days. So
right, it's, yeah. And that's like, it's a good thing because you, I mean, working good and having stuff to do is awesome, but is there a weird stress to having to, like, assist in producing a series that gets cranked out? Like, all right, we need to get this and get it rolling, and let's go. You know what I mean?
I don't know. It's the only thing I've ever known, I guess. You know, so, like, to me, it's not anything different. You know, I just... Once a season starts, it's pretty much a realization that until it's over, don't sleep a lot.
It's a grind.
You know what I mean? You know, really, like, just a little backstory on how the editing started. It was just because I wanted to be in a tree or just in the woods as much as possible.
Yeah.
And I realized the only way you get to spend more time doing that is if you edit faster.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, that's...
Which goes to probably staying up all night editing because... You're not hunting when it's dark, and that's probably that's the prime time to get it done. So there's a lot of guys that want to do what you do for a living in the outdoor industry. Like, how do you, like, how did you learn what you know and like get to this point to where you're doing these cool series for DeerCast? Like, I mean, I don't know if you, how deep you want to get into that, but I mean, there's a lot of young guys probably like, man, I want to do that for a living. Yep. Like, what advice would you have for them? Or like, where do they even get to go in the direction they need to be to try and pursue something like that?
Well, first and foremost, you know, I could talk about, you have to have a strong work ethic. You have to have a desire to want to learn. You have to have a passion. But at the end of the day, I wouldn't be doing things at the level that I'm doing them without the people that I've got to work with up until this point. You know, there's been a lot of special individuals that have invested a lot of time in giving you a chance, you know, and that's,
of course,
you know, what I, you know, Carson.
Hard work, though, gets you there, too, no matter what. You know, if you were a bum, a lot of those guys wouldn't really, like, take time to mentor you in certain ways. You know, that's, I mean, what I've learned anyway.
Yeah.
That's one of the things about Josh. I always say he works, he eats, and he sleeps, and that's all he does.
Yeah.
And that's all I've seen.
Yeah.
His work ethic is really commendable, and it's good work. It's not sloppy.
Right, right.
So that's a, you know, a credit to Josh and who he is as a person, you know, and you don't see that a lot. Josh is 26 and, you don't see that a lot in some people that age.
Yeah.
But we're blessed in the fact that our entire crew, many of them are young. You take Perry, he's 26, Taylor, 26, Carson, Ben, both in their early 20s.
Yeah.
Wade's just turned 30, but their work ethic is just second to none.
Yeah.
But I think it comes from the passion they have about what we do.
Yeah.
Like 100%. Every one of them, they work on it all day, and then we'll talk about it and visit about it all night. And what's the next project? What's the next deer? Like, it consumes everyone's minds. You know, they love the outdoor space and the outdoor lifestyle, and it's really a blessing to see so many young people so passionate about something. Definitely.
That's something I was going to get to. You know, like, you know, eat, sleep, work, pretty much, but you have to be passionate about your work to make your life that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it just won't work, and you could sense that, like, they're just not in it if you're not truly passionate about why we're all together and why we all know each other and why people are watching this on DeerCast. You know what I mean? It's all – everyone's passionate about the same thing. It's how can you take your passion and make it your work, really.
Yeah.
It's like – and that's hard for a lot of people, and I'm trying to channel that as hard as I can, you know, in my direction, what I do. So it is cool, and that's why I wanted to get to that for some of the younger guys that are looking at someone in your position going, man, that'd be cool to – be able to do those and film and edit and produce and get these cool series out, especially in the turnaround time that you guys have been doing it is incredible.
Yeah. I mean, if I had to point to one thing that if I could tell anybody that wants to do this, it's don't wait for your opportunity and then decide to try to get better at something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Especially in the production world, you could, you know, make a million excuses of, well, I'll wait to get a job or a gig or whatever it is. But, you know, for me, you know, in the early days, and Carson and I talk about this all the time, but it's like you have to work outside of work in order to get to where you want to be because there's a million people out there, like you said, that want to do it.
Yeah.
And they'll do it for, you know, less.
Yep.
And that's the hard part is, I think, is that barrier of entry. And then the other thing, too, is just, you know, every person you meet. Look at it as a way to, you know, expand your network and
for sure, and make new friends, and that leads into more.
And that's the thing. Like last night, we were talking about it. It was kind of the pinnacle moment that I really felt like I'm right where I need to be with the family of people that I've, you know, it's a really surreal feeling. I don't know.
It's probably like a cool feeling of like comfort and but yet motivation and kind of fueling your passion a little bit more behind what your work is.
Happiness.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, really,
it's happiness and love. I talked to him last night in this barn. I was like, You gotta love, right? And if you can't love the people you're working with, what's the use of being there?
Life's miserable, man.
It's miserable, you know? So why not get with a group of people you just can't stand to be without, right? You want to see them. You want to go have fun. You want that next experience, and you want to love them. So it's important.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. And as I get a little older and, you know, I've worked different jobs and, you know, obviously the outdoors is my passion, podcasting, hunting's my passion, podcasting's my second passion, but it's bleeding in together, you know? I always say we're hunters first. But anyway, like, it's cool, man, to be a part of a community and, like, find your niche in this industry, which is a crowded industry and a tough industry. So it's cool to get, like, footing for really anybody that, no matter, like, if it's podcasting or video or whatever it may be, you know? But I wanted to go back a little bit talking about work because – I see some comments now, like the more popular our podcast gets, I see, well, are you guys really working class? Are you guys really doing this? And I think that's worth hitting a little bit, because you talked about like work ethic and work. And I think a lot of people assume you're not a working class guy unless you're like a pipeline guy or a welder. And I always kind of come back and I'm like, if you have the work ethic, if you have a work ethic bone in your body, if you know how to grind, if you know how to hustle, no matter what it is, you're working class. And because somebody has something that they worked really hard for, doesn't make them no longer working class. Mm-hmm. Like if you want whatever big fancy truck and you get it, it doesn't make you now working class because you have a fancy truck instead of a $2,000 beater.
Yeah.
Like you worked your butt off to get the vehicle. Same guys that work to get leases and private ground access and buy their own farm or buy whatever house or whatever, you know.
Yep. So that maybe that's to say you're only working class if you're working at a job you hate. Right?
Well, and I think honestly, I think some people kind of make it be that way.
Right.
But it's like, hey, listen, you know, some people have passions that they pursue and put their working class work ethic into that passion.
Sure.
And so it doesn't matter what you can sit at a desk mm-hmm. and wear a tie. You can still be working class. Now, I understand the allure to the grit of being tattooed and being a welder and
sure.
You know what I mean? I get that. Yep. That it's attractive. Like that is, I think that is attractive, actually. I think that type of blue collar, just, you know, what do they call it? Dirty hands, clean money type mentality is cool. But I don't think that means that we should look down on someone that worked hard in their passion on a computer, behind a camera, behind a podcast mic, whatever it may be. Because, you know, that's, it's just, you got to be passionate about it.
Work ethic's work ethic. And, you know, regardless if you're out there, you know, Terry still owns a construction company, works in it every day in some shape or form until the fall comes. That's how I got my start, was working construction.
Yeah.
Did my entire, from the time I was 12 or 13 till the time I got into the outdoor industry when I met Toxie Hayes. I mean, poured concrete, dug ditches, sewer lines, water lines. I mean, you know, so that work ethic stays with you, whether you're working in a blue collar job or whether you're working doing podcasts or editing or you know, anything in the outdoors.
Yeah.
That work ethic sticks with you, and you really need it in this space to get ahead, because as you said, it's very crowded.
It's very crowded.
With some quality people too. There are a lot of really top shelf, unbelievable companies and people in our industry. So he mentioned barrier to entry. It's very tough to get in this industry.
I think it's healthy though, right? For like the space we're in, because I imagine in some of your work, it's made you force yourself to think outside the box or become more creative or like look at certain things differently, or, hey, this and this has already been done. I have an idea. What if we try to this angle or whatever it may be, some new fresh idea. And I'm sure that a lot of that motivates guys to get like outside of their creative mind a little bit and get after new things. Podcasting it does, but it's like, how much can you do and where can you take it?
Yep.
You know? So that's a fun part of it.
Yeah, deer season 21, I mean, it's just crazy. It feels like we've already been doing it a full season.
We're just getting started. It's like,
how many are out now at the time of recording this? There's I'm a pile.
11.
11? I'm way behind.
Get you some of that.
Yeah.
I'm way behind.
11, 12 comes out today. And
man.
There's a lot.
So when you
coming.
Say it comes out today, do you mean you've already, like, it's already being released, or you have to go back after this and wrap it up? I'm just trying to get to, like, some of the – because I know when we get done here, you're going back to work.
Yep.
And that goes back to what we were saying. And sorry to bring that back to you.
No, you're good. No. Ben actually completed one of the episodes down with Terry. So.
Oh, awesome. Cool.
So he's talking about Ben Stallman, who takes care of Terry's and Matt's season.
Gotcha.
And then Carson – is here working as well, who's working on Dream Season Live.
Yep.
And then Josh, in conjunction with guys at our studio, are working on Deer Season 21. Josh doing the lion's share of it. Then the safety valve there is the guys at the studio who have their own set of criteria that they're working on other stuff, you know?
Right, yeah.
But they help backfill just to try and keep the series flowing, you know? Because you get three kills the same night. I mean, he can't.
Yeah.
He's not... You know, he's not superhuman. He's close.
He'd be drowning.
Yeah, he's close. But you have to have the right personnel in place to get it all done and get it all out there. So
the work to even schedule, like, who gets what and how it needs to be, like, coordinated that efficiently has to be – at first, it's got to be, like, fairly daunting until you find your groove, I would imagine, right?
There was some of that, I think, up front. But you've got the flow pretty good right now.
Yeah, no. Yep.
It's falling into place and making sense. I mean, 11, I mean, you guys are – hit the ground running fast.
And on top of that, those 11 installments, it'll be 11, there's 10 out. Taylor does all of our metrics and stuff online. Mm-hmm. We hit 2.6 million minutes watched yesterday.
Wow.
So it's being consumed at a high, high level. Like, that's great. A pile of views yeah. and minutes.
And that just adds to it. That's going to make it feel way better. Oh, people yeah. are enjoying it and watching it and all that. That's
yeah.
incredible.
No, it's just cool to see that the hard work that, you know, like I said, the guys filming it, the guys hunting, us mm-hmm. on the production side.
Yeah.
It's just cool to see people's reactions be very positive and appreciate it for what it is. You know what I mean? Because that's the one thing you notice about, especially on the YouTube world, there's a lot of keyboard warriors out there.
Oh, it's bad.
Who like to tell you what you did wrong or, you know, I see it a lot where it's like, Mark and Terry, you go hunt public land, do this, hunt this way. And it's like,
we did.
Yeah. I mean, it's like
that. I think
now
that
I own a farm.
Well, I mean, that goes back. Like, you worked to a certain it's that. That's,
I mean, we cut our teeth on Rathbun, you know, and yeah. public ground in southern Missouri. And I mean, it's just, you know, it's what we did. So, but that's okay. Those folks that say negative things, they're still watching and they're still fans. I always use the correlation. Like, I'm a big baseball fan. You know, mm-hmm. I love the Cardinals. So I read every story, and all the people on Twitter that I follow are all baseball writers. And there's a list of just negative people just pounding the Cardinals every night.
Yeah.
But they're pounding the Cardinals every night, which means they watch every game.
Right, right.
They're upset when they lose. And that their passion, right?
Yep.
So I don't mind those negative comments because they're taking the time to write it because they took the time to watch it.
Yeah, okay.
And I appreciate that, you know. And I can always do better.
Yeah.
You know, it's the truth. There's still someone that's taking the time to watch your stuff. So
for sure.
And where I was going with that is that, you know, you asked about what are the things you do? Why do you like to do them?
Mm-hmm.
One of the personal responsibilities that I've always felt as a producer is it's my job to, one, tell the story of the hunts. I want the viewer to feel exactly how the hunter did.
I think
creating some sort of emotional connection there is the best thing you can do, because why are you watching it?
For sure.
Because you can't be there, or maybe you don't live in a state that you could do it. But the other part is, it's like, I take it personally with the guys that I work with or the video I'm doing. It's like, they're great people. Mm-hmm. They work their asses off.
Right, right.
I'm sorry.
You can.
I don't know what to say that.
Yeah, we can bleep it.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. They work their asses off.
You know, I'm used to being saying whatever I want in working class, and then I'm trying to be like clean.
Oh, you could say that. There's nothing wrong with that.
My point is like, there's, you know.
Behinds.
Behinds.
You know, you talked about.
Buttocks.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on.
But you spoke about family. You know what I mean? And that's one of the things that, you know, with Ben and Carson, you have a responsibility, and that's what Deer Season 21 is a representation of everybody involved.
For sure,
And so to see it paying off, that's the good feeling.
Yeah,
you know
definitely.
What I mean? It's not to me, views are awesome, and they're important, but the people is much more important to me, and that's where that responsibility to me comes
in. I get that. I think that's a cool way to look at it, too, and not only, like, if someone were that kills a deer on that series, you can kind of – you probably think about them a lot when you throw together that hunt.
Oh, yeah.
Like, man, that's how they're going to look back. It's almost like a home video for them for that memory and hunt, you know? So that's cool. I think that's a cool angle to look at. And, you know, like, the negative comment thing, I like the way you look at that, Mark. And what I was going to get, you talked about, like, the sports reference. Do you think it's kind of the same comparison of – I don't watch anything ball sports at all. I don't. But, you know, I see you guys be like, oh, man, that idiot when he did this. Well, it's like, you know, he's not an idiot. He's a high-level professional athlete, and we can never do anything they do. And do you think it's just like a – is it one of those things? Like, you don't really think the guy's an idiot for doing it. Is it like – are
like
those
I said,
the comments?
People show their passion in many different ways.
Right.
And some people show it in a negative fashion, you know.
On YouTube.
That's okay. So
– yeah.
I always look at it that way. And secondly, if they're picking on us, they're leaving somebody else alone. So, you know, we got broad shoulders. We could take it. And we read it all, and we try to make sure everybody understands that we want to do right by them, and we want to produce stuff that they're interested in. So
for sure,
we do take them to heart, and we try to respond back to everybody.
Yeah, definitely.
Because we love the fact that they took the time.
Yeah, that's a good point to look at. But, you know, I see some comments on ours like, you guys need to cover more of this. I'm like, well, we've done almost 500 podcasts. We have covered that, and not every episode we're going to cover a 5-acre piece of property on every episode or an hour long for 500 episodes. So don't see one episode and then leave a hate comment and think we never talked about that territory. Like, we have.
They only know what they know in their mind.
That's,
you know,
it.
So.
That's it. And, you know, whatever. Bless their hearts.
Yep.
But, no, I think it's great, man. I think Deer Season 21 is killing it. DeerCast right now is killing it. We're proud to be a part of this family. It's cool that you're a part of the family. I mean, really about the same time.
No.
I mean, we came a part of it, you know, and so it's cool the way it's working out.
Essentially.
Yeah.
I've known both of you about the same amount of time as well. Maybe Kurt one year longer, but both of you have affected us greatly in the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. How long have we been podcasting together, Kurt? 3-4 years?
On and off 3 years, I would say. Yeah.
I met Josh 2.5 years ago. 3 years ago.
2019.
Okay, yeah, so 2 years
roughly
ago.
The same. Yeah.
So it's pretty cool to see how it's evolved. And here we sit today in beautiful southern Iowa and Decatur County. And we're not hunting tonight because DeerCast says poor. We're podcasting.
I know.
Podcasting says great.
You know what's funny is that's a good – we need to add that in. So we were planning on coming earlier this week.
Yes.
And DeerCast was good in these certain days. And and
you saw him those days, didn't you?
I saw my buck those days. And it's real, man. I'm telling you.
It's
like,
legit.
You can't – it might seem like smoking mirrors, but it's not. So I'm like, okay, Mark wants me to come down and podcast. That's cool. I'm going to do it. But I'm like, hey, man, like, it's looking good. And I almost used your own tool against you to, like, not hold me to come down.
Like,
I'm like, look at, man, screenshot of DeerCast. And you're probably like, you son of a
– No, I get it. You know, and that's why we picked these days, because it's at pour and it's blazing hot. And it's you know, they'll move a little bit. It'll be quite late, I think.
Yeah, definitely. That's what my camera's been telling me the same thing. But DeerCast
most of it after dark.
Yep. Definitely 2 hours after dark is what I've got the last two nights.
Yep.
So I'm not even sweating it.
Yep.
And really,
it's coming.
You know, we got our rain, which is great, but it was so dry, and I made a couple moves, and I'm like, man, I just need rain to kind of wash everything and clean everything up. I was riding the Rogue Ridge in, and that I always call it my magic carpet, because you're kind of like gliding in, you
glide,
know,
right
spot,
over it. Yeah,
which
it's
is
pretty cool,
amazing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's. Yeah, good day for podcasting. But
it's a great day for podcasting, Kurt.
I love
so
it, man.
So which episode have you enjoyed working on the most so far, Josh? You've done several so far.
Well, selfishly, the Missouri Double was awesome just because of that night.
Yep.
That's a night I'll never forget.
Yeah.
You know, Wade and I, it got fast-paced, really. That's what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah. It got really frantic.
I was falling quickly.
I mean, it was just like the hunt, we were done. The hunt was over, and then we look up, and it's like, here he comes, and he's dead. And then we're like, oh, my gosh. Mark comes up. We're telling him the story, and he goes, well, which one do you want to track first? And we're like, what are you talking about? I mean, we had no idea. None at all.
So you just hit him with that, and you let his own brain process it.
I mean,
just dial tone for a second.
Because ours was, you know, I'd already hit him early in the evening, and we went and waited till they gave us the okay to come in.
Yeah.
And then that's when I told him, you know, I wanted to surprise him a little bit.
Yeah. No, that was a cool moment. That was a cool moment for Carson. That was the first deer or first buck he's ever filmed. So that one was pretty special.
Yeah.
But I think my favorite one, honestly, was Austin's, the first one.
Yep.
You know,
that was a good episode.
Really good.
Well, it was beautiful views, you know, a place that I definitely someday hope to see.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also a very big, you know, that was the first time you and I have ever given feedback, made changes, et cetera.
Worked together.
And that was a, you know, a very cool experience.
This is a kickoff for it, really.
Yeah.
It
really was.
Yeah.
Setting the tone for the season of it.
Yeah. And I changed a lot when I watched it.
Yeah. You know, that was a first time in a long time that I've had somebody, you know, challenge me to do stuff differently. And that was one of the big reasons why this, I think, is such a great fit, you know.
For sure.
Personally, you know, Mark is 100% always going to have your back to try to make you a better person.
That's great.
You know what I mean? And that's
cool that environment means, to be a part of.
Yeah, it means the world to me. You know what I mean? And so that episode was a pretty special one.
Yeah.
So they've all been cool, though, content-wise. I mean,
absolutely. The team kills
it, deer.
Man. I enjoyed Brian's episode out there in Wyoming. I mean, that doe with the water coming out of her mouth.
Yeah,
the multi-cameras he and Cody had out. I mean, those guys are they're rock stars. It's why they won Producer of the Year last year, you know?
Yeah.
And then Greg and Casey killed it in Colorado. They were Producer of the Year 2 years previous. And, you know, the guys are just – we have a really talented group of guys that produce.
Yeah, on another level.
The best in our – on another level. The best in the industry by far.
Yeah. Greg and Casey just came up to see us at the studio, I mean, a couple months ago.
Yep.
Came in and podcasted with us. And we have that – it's now become like a famous story within our listeners that Doug fell asleep during one of Greg's stories. Did you hear about that?
No.
Well, we'll talk about it later. But we had a long day at a trade show. and Doug may have had a couple beers, and we had a big steak dinner. And then we go back to the hotel suite.
Food coma.
And Doug's sitting, we're sitting on the couch. It's me, Austin Chandler, Doug, and then it's Greg and Casey over here, and we're podcasting, and Austin's like nudging me. And I'm looking around, and I look over, and Doug's just having a nap. And I just halt the whole podcast. I'm like, hey, dude, we're talking about 200-inch deer here. Are you okay? And he was so embarrassed. He feels so terrible about it to this day. But it's great because Greg and Casey just razz him about it every time. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So pretty much in the comments on the – it was a video podcast, too, which added to it. In the comments, like, we're here to see Doug sleeping because they heard us talking about it.
Sure.
So, that's just a fun story. So – first time that's ever happened with our crew. So, sorry, Greg.
No. That's funny. Josh, what type of time do you think it takes per episode of you punching keys? You getting 30 hours per episode, 20?
I'd say 10 to 15.
Very nice.
10 to 15 hours per episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it. I don't know, man. Once it starts, it's just like I'm possessed.
You get in the zone and go.
Yeah.
That's what I've noticed. Like, he'll edit extremely fast and get the episode done, and then it's like it sucks all his energy and creativity, and then you got to chill doing other things for a day or two, and then he'll go tackle another one, you know?
I get that. That makes sense. Yeah.
He's got to, like, his brain battery, creativity battery has to recharge.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, that's a thing, you know?
It's a thing.
How do you – when you get – footage and all this, and you kind of know the rough, I'm sure you know the story roughly before you go through footage for most of it. How do you even, do you just watch it all, everything you have, and then start chopping, or do you watch and chop at the same, like, what's the method to the madness here?
So going back to what I kind of said earlier.
Don't give away your secrets, though, but I'm trying to tap in a little bit to see how you even go about it.
Number one, the first thing I want to do is I want to talk to the person about what the hunt. You know, usually when a person calls you, they say, dude, this is what happened, right?
Right, yeah.
That is exactly how the viewer should feel when they get done watching your video.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
You know, because the person who knows the story the best is the person that was there. You know what I mean? So
for sure.
That right there gives me the mold or the emotion that I'm trying to communicate. You know, and that's my favorite thing about making videos is ideally if it's done right, you feel something after it.
For sure.
I listen to all the interviews first, you know, because the number one thing you're going to figure out is what do I have footage for? Mm-hmm. What don't I have footage for? So more or less, it's figuring out what am I not going to show? What can't we show?
Right.
What wasn't filmed, et cetera. And then it just kind of starts. You know, honestly, the hardest part is finding music. That
really?
Sounds stupid, but like I think music, again, editors all have different perspectives on what's most important. But music to me can make or break an emotional connection or feeling or
definitely
if it's too slow. That's one thing that I've, you know, him and I've worked on a lot is pace, you know what I mean, and being able to pick up and then slow down, pick up and slow down, and you know, it's that would probably be the secret per se. I don't even know if it's a secret, it's just
I pay attention to music a lot when I watch videos. I'm very like music focused. So I get that. Like I think that probably be my hardest thing too, because I feel like it's just like being indecisive on what should go where and how it should go.
Yep.
Well, music is the emotion of the piece, you know? Yeah. Like music can make you happy, can make you down, sad a little bit.
Tense.
You know? Tense.
Yeah.
Make you excited. So got to have the appropriate music.
I like what you said, though. You listen to the story first. That makes a lot of sense. And it seems, now that you say that, it seems obvious, but I just picture, like, you know, you have all this footage and it just probably seems overwhelming. Like, for me, with not having I have minimal experience with that, not on your guys' level. I'm just like, it just seems like so much. But that makes a lot of sense. Like, it kind of gives you the casting of what you need, and then you can fill in the mold there and kind of paint that story how they basically explained it to you. That does make a lot of sense.
And, you know, you talked about the work ethic or the motivation, but it's a privilege to be trusted with somebody. I mean, that's something Carson and I talk about all the time. If somebody's going to give you all of this footage and say, hey, represent me well, that's a huge responsibility.
For sure.
Because nobody's going to watch a video and go, man, that Josh guy's an idiot. Why'd he put, you know, why is this,
right.
You know
what I mean? Yeah, I know what you mean,
And so, like, that's something I take very seriously.
He's a keyboard warrior. Because his name's not on it. It's his work. But it's the guy, you know, or the girl, whoever it is, you know. So he can make him look really bad if he wants to. Myself, Terry, it takes a lot of work to make us look good, you know. So
you got to get real creative.
Yeah.
I get that, though. I mean, there is some trust in that. It's like, hey, don't make me look like an idiot. because this, you know what I mean? A bad edit. I mean, you had me editing this stuff. You'd be like, man, we look really dumb, Kurt. You got to have Josh fix all of this for you. That's how it would go.
No, it's, yeah.
This is my job as a podcaster, is to seem really dumb so my guests seem really smart.
Well,
it takes me not a lot of effort to get that vibe across. That's why it works. That's why I'm working class, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a college dropout, so, you know, that's...
Hey, you're doing just fine, I think.
Yeah. No, it... I'm trying to think of anything else that comes to mind of what is important in making these things. Number one is just enjoying it. Yeah. I love every single... Okay, that's a lie. There are definitely moments that you're just like, man, you said it best.
Give me an example of that. Like, what's one thing you're like, I hate this? Or maybe you don't even say that. Maybe you don't ever hate anything that much. But, like, you know what I mean? Every job has a something about it. You're like, it's my least favorite part.
I hate when I can't get things done quickly. I hate falling behind. You know, and that's, like, one thing. Like, when you shoot something every other day, it's pretty easy to fall behind in the semi-live world.
But that's just pressure on yourself, though.
Yeah.
That's like a self-inflicted.
But it's real pressure.
100% what it is.
It's real pressure, yeah.
You know, he doesn't have a month to get it done because then there's, you know,
right.
the, 40 the, others.
The pressure
20 others.
Of the timeline, I can see that. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I honestly don't know if I could point to something in the actual job itself that I hate or that I've ever gotten to the point where I'm like, I don't want to do this.
Mm-hmm. That's healthy.
I mean, the reason I got into it, I mean, I've told him this story, but when I, like I mentioned, I dropped out of college because I got a job offer from Bill Winky, and I was terrified to tell my mother. And I'm like, oh, no.
Of course.
She was completely cool with it.
She was.
She's like, go back to school. You know, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Make it happen.
Right.
My dad freaked out and said, grow up, get a real job, stop messing around. You can't make money in the woods. And I was like, watch me.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And from there, that was a motive, you know, just watching my dad take 1 week of vacation. It goes back to what you said. We're all here for one reason. Mm-hmm. And it's an appreciation and passion for what we, you know, are looking at outside the woods.
For sure.
The friends. And
how long ago was that when you dropped out of school to do this? Like when your dad kind of had
2017.
So has his like, of course, I'm assuming it's changed, right?
Yeah. We talk about it. I mean, anytime he sees a
video.
You
rub it in his face?
No. I mean, again, he's a great man.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
he just, again. He's
concerned for his son.
Yeah,
successful.
It could have went wrong. And that's where, you know, again, I'm very blessed to have worked with the people that I have. I mean, again, I can't sit here and go, I'm the reason why. I mean, yes, you take advantage of opportunities or you work really hard.
Hard work creates opportunity, man.
You know, I think there's a lot of people that I think lose sight of who helped them get there. And that's something I never... You know, I want to lose. You know, it's
that's
it takes a village, as you know, you say. So
for sure,
it.
Well, you're killing it, man, and it's cool to be involved in the same family that you're in, and it's pretty awesome.
No,
so man, you're gonna kill it. You're gonna keep killing it. It's awesome. If anyone for some reason is watching this and hasn't seen Deer Season 21, I don't know what's wrong with you, because. Go watch that first, then come back and watch the rest of our podcast. But no, you're killing it, man. And I'm glad we were finally able to get the podcast in. And this just means next time you guys have to come to the studio.
I'm in.
And record.
100%.
And then we can do a three, and you can say the ASS word on that podcast. Actually, anything else you want.
So, literally.
Yeah. It's what we do, man. That's the beautiful thing about having two separate deals. It's fun this way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, we can tap into different areas. So
absolutely.
It's important. Hey,
appreciate
thank you, man. Appreciate you. Good work.
Thanks for the job.
Thank you for job. Many jobs well done. Now get back to work.
Yes, awesome. Sir.
Hey, and now we're saying go shoot a giant. That's what we're saying on this. So
I love it.
This goes into the Giant Tracker series. Thanks for watching the podcast. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We appreciate the support. Share it up. Like it. Leave us some comments. Get in DeerCast. Let us know what you think. And we will get with you. We'll get some episode recommendations as we roll along with this. So go shoot a giant. Hope you enjoy this Giant Tracker segment.
Hey guys, the fourth Giant Tracker segment here on Working Class on DeerCast, and we have Mr. Ben Rising calling in via Zoom, and we've been meaning to have you in studio, in the Working Class Bowhunter studio, because we're kind of in between two of your properties, it sounds like, so we've been chatting a little bit, so
this works for now, but I would like to see you in the studio soon, hopefully.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I plan on trying to get there. I'm, you know, got to make my presence known in the famous working class bow hunter studio, you know.
Yeah. Well,
just have the madman be the only one to grace his presence in there.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, well, if Mark Drury can make it here, I think you can figure it out too. So, but no, I mean, we've been chatting for, I mean, a little while off and on over the months, and this Giant Tracker segment came up. You were featured in one of the Giant Tracker segments on DeerCast. More specifically for the buck, the King 8, which I think is awesome. I gravitate to giant 8-pointers. I think they're super interesting. I almost would take a big giant 8 over like a big giant 10 just because it takes more. They had to be more of a specimen to score higher as an 8-pointer, you know?
Yeah, it takes a big frame and tall tines usually, you know, for an 8 to get up there, or lots of mass.
Right, yeah. It's kind of have to have like one really strong feature or a strong features of all of them. Like I have 3 8-pointers in the 150 range. I consider a buck over 130 as a clean 8-pointer, a good buck. So let's talk about the King 8, man. I mean, you can start the story wherever, but how big is the King 8? What kind of 8-pointer are we talking here?
161 is what he gross scored.
Yeah, that's insane. That's a giant 8.
Yeah, he looked giant too.
Yeah, just
framed. You know, and the sad thing was, is I don't have this farm anymore. I leased it. Mm-hmm. It was a farm that I was leasing, and it was 300 some acres in Eastern Illinois. It was a great farm. But man, it was just so darn expensive. Like, I was leasing it through base camp. Now some other guys from Virginia have it, and they killed like a 180s or something the next year, I guess, you know.
Oh, really?
But I had a really nice 10 pointer that I was trying to kill, or this 8-pointer, and the 8-pointer was just a lot more visible. And, you know, when you're doing a show and trying to run around and film, you got to shoot the one that's going to give you the shot, present itself, you know. And I would have been happy with either one. So, and I kind of thought, well, I'll just get the 10 next year. Then I just decided to let it go just for the price. I mean, it was just stupid. I was like, I could buy ground for what I was paying.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I did. But
well, good for you, man. Know. Illinois is expensive, and people think, you know, it's, you know, you can buy a buck tag over the counter here, and that's probably what jacks the price up in Chicago, maybe a little bit. But I feel you, man. It's hard to find a lease that you can afford every year. You got to work your butt off.
Ohio's the same way. I mean, I live in Ohio, you're talking 30, 50 bucks an acre now for leases.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Just to shoot a stupid deer, you know, and I mean,
right.
It has really gotten commercialized really bad, you know, and I mean, we're all guilty of it. That's the sad part.
Yeah.
You know, I've kind of been a demise of my own situation in a sense, you know, like making my area really popular in Ohio. And, you know, now I struggle with growing deer past 3.5, 4.5 years old around here anymore, because there's just so much hunting pressure.
Yeah.
You know, and it didn't used to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
I can see that.
And, you know, it's just with the TV and videos and everything, things have changed. Like, you know, back in the day, TV, the only place you could watch hunting was on TV or a DVD.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it's your fingertips.
Right.
And so there's so many more people into it. There's so many, you know, they've changed laws in every state, you know, for like crossbows, different things. So it's just allowed a lot more people to be in the timber.
Mm-hmm. You know? For sure.
And people are better hunters now because they're more educated. We have a lot more advancement in technology for people to be better hunters.
For sure.
You know,
plus a lot of these information. Just the information in general. I mean, DeerCast alone, to podcast, to YouTube, to everything. Yeah. You know, people can learn anything they want right now, which is crazy. But going back to this 8-pointer, so you said you would have shot the 10-pointer or the 8. You thought, you know, you'd go after the 10 next year. I mean, how long did the cat and mouse game work out with this buck? Was it a cat and mouse type situation? I mean, how long?
2 days. 2 days. 2 days.
Not so, take it, man.
Yeah. I mean, so I waited to hunt until like late October.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the exact dates right at the moment, but, cause that was back in 19, I think it was, I shot that deer. And so I waited till late October. You know, I was kind of seeing on my Spartan cell cams, you know, I live in Ohio, this is Illinois. So I rely on cell cams to kind of tell me when the scrapes are heating up and just when deer activity is getting better. And I'm going to like, okay, I'm going to jump in the truck and it's time to go hit the road and see what deer are doing more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was starting to just be more active. All the bucks were. They always are late October. We all know that. Mm-hmm. But he started to be a little more active in daylight. So I decided, okay, I'm going to go try a certain area of the farm. And the very first night we slid in and hunted a little green food source next to some standing beans with some cover and a bedding hollow there. He actually came out into the beans, was pushing some does around. I thought we were actually going to get him to come to us. I called to him, you know, a couple times and I got him in that plot, but he just stayed out at like 50 yards. And I just didn't want to take that shot. I was like, you know, I felt confident I could get on him again, you know, so
smart.
We just, yeah. So we just kind of, I didn't want to push it. And I kind of took the info. I felt good that I saw him the first night. I was like, this is awesome. You know, and he was huge. I'm like, wow, that is one heck of an eight, you know?
Yeah.
So I had no qualms about shooting him at that point. Like, I'm like, I'm going to be completely tickled with this deer if I can get him.
Yeah. You definitely. Know? Yeah.
So at that point I was like, I'm going to need to make a move because I think I know what he's going to do again tomorrow type of thing. And so we did a hanging hunt the next evening. And we ended up getting him that evening, but you know, it was a situation where he would come into the field. And we knew he was kind of searching. He was looking for does and trying to find that first available doe. So when those bucks are doing that, they're coming to any food source they can, scoping for does. Mm-hmm. And we knew he was going to come to that beans close to that green source. And that's exactly what he did. He come out into those beans looking, he was probably 150 yards away. And it took a little coaxing, but after a serious calling session of some grunts, some bleats, making it sound like a buck, some bucks chasing does around the corner that he couldn't see, and then actually banging some black racks together a little bit, he finally broke at that point.
No kid, just like the curiosity got the best of him, and he came in to check it out.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you just got to be able to read deer language, you know, like, you know, when you can push a deer and when you can't push a deer.
Yeah.
And he was giving me all the signs that I could still push him. You know, gotcha. He was curious. He was flicking his tail. He actually stopped and peed down his legs right there. Like I knew
no kidding.
He was like, yeah, he was just like, dang it. You know, like, what do I do? What do I do? And finally, when I did that rattle in a little bit, and he just couldn't see those deer, that just had it, you know, and I snort wheezed at him actually too. And then he finally, once he committed, he was on a string. I mean, he came right to us 27 yards.
No kid. So that's probably a key factor in calling out a deer, right? Like, it just brings up a good point, whether or not, like, if they can see down into a bottom where you're at and you're grunting and doing all that stuff, and they can't see anybody down there, they're probably less likely to come in versus if there's like a blind corner or something where they're like, man, I need to get around there to look. That's probably, do you think that's one of the big factors in like calling out a big mature whitetail like that?
Oh, I do. And you know, they're, it's kind of like turkeys are notorious for that. You know, like if they can't see like the deep, you know, if a big gobbler, you know, like around here, we call them drive-bys. These turkeys in this big timber, they'll come driving by. Like if they can't see you or they can't see the hen when they pop up over that ridge, they're gone. You know, that's what these bucks will do too. Like he knew there was a whole side of that field he couldn't see. Now, if he knew he could see the whole field, I doubt that he would have came.
Right.
You know,
that makes
because,
sense.
You know, he, so I kind of was fortunate that I had set up where that corner was behind me, but just his body language alone, a lot of people don't understand how to read deer language and when they're pushing them too hard or when they're not. And I don't like the blind call a lot, but sometimes I do because most of the time they're going to try to get downwind to you if they can.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So he comes in on a string. He said you watched him pee down his leg. He comes into like, what'd you say? 26 yards?
27 yards. Yeah.
27 yards. Just right under you or what? Just.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much. I mean, on the video, you can watch it. He comes across this field. We film him all the way. He crosses the waterway. He comes right through the cut beans, right out in front of me. I'm dialing my HHA. You can see it on video. I dial it right to where I need it. I range it, dial it, wait for him to get to that spot, stop him and pinwheel him.
No, did you watch him go down?
No, he cleared the field, but I mean, you could tell he was smoked, you know,
when you hit him that way, you're just like, oh yeah, money.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sure. Talk about walking up to this buck, because I know, you know, you said you thought he was massive. You're excited. It's a giant 8-pointer, a 161 inch mainframe. It's insane. Were you surprised with how big it was when you got up to him, or was he what you were expecting?
No, he actually felt bigger once I got to him. You know, I mean, I knew he was big, but once I got my hands on him and got behind him, I mean, then you could see, I was just like, holy smokes, this deer's a lot better than I thought he was even, you know? So I felt really blessed. I mean, it was incredible to, he actually was a nine. He had a little G4, but we called him the King Eight because he was a big eight the year before.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And so he had got the name King Eight. So when we killed the deer and everybody, you know, we called it the King Eight on Facebook, you know, for our posts and everything. Of course, every jackass gets on there. It's 9 points, you dummy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh, man. I mean, it's like the G4 is like that big. We didn't even count it.
I'm the same way as you are. Like if I see, like if I shoot a 9-pointer like that, I'm like, oh yeah, he's a big mainframe eight. Like I do the same thing. Yeah. If you're like 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, counting it, but yeah, we get those comments on some of our deer posts. And I actually, when I was looking at pictures of the King Eight online earlier this week, I saw some of those comments in there. They're like, I know math is pretty hard, but I count nine. So
yeah, exactly.
I actually was going to bring that up before you said it, that, you know, anything that's, I just consider it a mainframe eight anyway, even if it's a 9-pointer. I don't know. That's just me. Like he's going to score as a mainframe eight.
Yeah. I mean, now if he'd had like a 10-inch G4 or 6 inches, I guess it'd be different.
It's different, yeah.
But the thing's like, it's like an inch, if not. And he was a clean eight for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, so he just got the name King Eight.
Well, maybe those people will watch and listen to this podcast and they'll be like, oh, okay, I get it. And then maybe you'll get a little less of that in the future if you kill another giant eight with
I don't count on it though. Social media people are, you know what it's like.
Oh, they're in their own planet, man. It's fine. Yeah. You need them though, in a weird way.
Yeah, that's right. The thing I can never figure out though, Kurt, is like, you know, it's one thing for people to think stuff, but to actually type it out and say it, it's like, come on.
I've always wondered that in the deer hunting community. I mean, it's every community, every industry's got those people. It's just social media or human nature. And I don't know what causes people to like leave negative reviews and thumbs down on videos and stuff. You know what I do if I don't like something or don't agree with it? I don't do anything on the videos.
I move on. It's kind of like the whole political issues of like, you know, like most Republicans like us, you know, are just kind of like, if you don't agree with me, that's fine. Whatever. I'm going to go about doing thing, live my life.
Yep.
But this other agenda now, it's like, it's life or death if you don't believe what they believe.
For sure. It is. And it's the dangerous road to go down, like that type of ideology in any facet of, you know, religion, politics, hunting, disagreements, hunting, anything. It's just a dangerous path to go down, I think, as a society.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, hey, at least we all have each other on DeerCast.
Yeah, that's right.
So, hey, man, I appreciate you telling the story. It was quick and simple. That just leads us into, I mean, there's so much I want to talk to you about, but it's due for its own podcast. So I know
we'll make it happen because I'm getting ready to head to Illinois here probably next week sometime.
Okay.
And so maybe we can get an evening where we can all catch up at the studio there. And
let's do it. You know, we'll have a cold beer waiting for you and we'll talk deer hunting.
Okay. Sounds good, man.
Hey, I appreciate you, man. Thanks for doing this. Yep. Hopefully everybody enjoyed this. Thanks for watching Giant Tracker, the fourth segment. I'm trying to keep track as we go along. So thanks, brother. And I'll link, if I can, I'll link that hunt in the description of the podcast so people can watch the King Eight.
Yeah, they'll enjoy it.
Yep. Awesome, man.
Yep. Well, and all events on Whitetail Edge. So
awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, man. Hope you guys enjoyed watching and listening. We appreciate you. Go shoot a giant. We'll see you on the next one.